Okay, welcome to the Litron Injection Podcast. Yes, I haven't been, I haven't done one of these in months. I love doing them, but life has been busy. If you like me doing them, then tell me, motivate me. If there's more than six of you that actually listen to this thing, then it'd be awesome to know that so I could make that a priority. And, you know, they say you got to release a podcast every, week, like on a regular basis if you want to build the damn thing up. You know, I'd love to, but, you know, it's one of those things where I have a real job now. And on top of the real job, I have to, I want to build stuff. And Saturday mornings, like I'm doing it right now, I'm not building things so I can talk to you. I don't mean to make you feel guilty, but I want to make it clear that it's a compromise. And so, but today I have a lot to talk about on the electronics front, so let's get to it. And so, you know, what have I been up to? I've been building the idiot Christmas controller. Idiot Christmas light controller, that is. It'd be funny if you could control Christmas. I'll control Christmas. It's like a Peaky in the Brain episode. My favorite episode, by the way. And so I've been building the idiot Christmas light controller. And the general idea is for this initial round, for this Christmas, I'm going to have 8 boxes in my yard. And each box is going to control... have an outlet, essentially. So I'm going to have 64 outlets sprinkled all through my yard in banks of 8 so that I can control them wirelessly with one master controller. And so I can blink 64 different channels and control them however I want. Each channel should be able to hold or handle about an amp, although I won't push them near that hard. But I'll be able to arrange it so that I'm never exceeding 10 amps. That's kind of one of my favorite things. I can't wait to do the measure the current on this thing and have the microcontroller react to that. So that's something I never have whatever it is. Let's just say 40 strands of lights is 10 amps. I don't think that's it, but I'll just make sure I never have more than 40 on or whatever. So that's kind of cool. So anyway, that's my big plan, and I want it to be ridiculous. And so I end up settling on, like I said, 64 channels, which I think I end up buying 70 strands of lights. And we'll get into all that. But the long story short is in 2012, I had no idea what I was doing. I still have the thing I built. I had 8 channels, and I synced it up to MIDI. And I had some of the most idiotic Christmas lights you've ever seen. And it was really fun. And I was using, you know, blue relays and blowing them like crazy. And I'm inrush current had to be, you know, a billion amps on those things. And I was blowing them left and right. And had no clue what I was doing, but I just got an Arduino and I was like, this is awesome. And that's actually what pulled me into electronics again. And I haven't stopped since. So here we are, you know, 9 years later. And so I always wanted to go back and do it correctly. And really do it and do it right and do it big. And so at the moment, I'm going with the 64 channels, but I may expand that. I haven't looked at the code, what the libraries limit me to, or if I even have to be limited to these libraries. But I'm using the ESP32 for this, and I'm pretty sure I can expand that quite greatly. So anyway, I'm going full idiot here. As my style. And so a lot of what we're going to talk about today is about the idiot Christmas light controller. Okay, first thing though I want to talk about is the value in taking things apart. We're engineers or hobbyists, makers, call it whatever, you know, we're people that break shit and make shit. And taking things apart is a given, but I've had stuff laying around. Like, for example, there was this JVC stereo that looked kind of expensive. It was laying in somebody's yard. This is like 5 years ago, and I was like, cool, picked it up, the damn thing weighed like 40 pounds, like, it was a big boom box from like a year, a time gone by, but it was all flashy, LED, and when I turned it on, all the lights came on, but some protection mode came on, and most likely, you know, there's just one little signal to a microcontroller that's not quite right, and, if I wanted to spend a morning on it, I probably could have figured it out, assuming I had schematics and all that sort of thing. But it sat here for 5 years, and there was a point where I'm like, you know what? It occurred to me that as much as it would be fun to fix a stereo, but would it be the most fun? And like right now, I'm doing the podcast. Right now, the podcast is the most fun. Besides, like you know, getting wet and wild with the old lady, I can't think of anything else on my day that I want to do more. And that's kind of how, if we're, you know, operating on our own volition and not doing duty, we do the most fun thing. And so I'm just never going to fix that stereo. It came to me that I'm never going to fix it because I would rather be designing products than I would be fixing them. And it's just, you know, who I am. Although I really like, I mean, would I like to shoot a flamethrower? Yes. But right now I'm doing a podcast. I'm busy. So that's kind of the thought process there. So I decided to take the stereo apart. And here's some cool stuff I learned. For one, they had an aluminum heat sink. Imagine kind of like a horseshoe, like a U shape, I guess is better. And it was a heat sink where they'd mounted several MOSFETs or something to it. Might have been some kind of rectifier, but whatever. And I always, I'm big on thawing out meat. Like when I set out meat, I always have these piles of little pieces of aluminum I'm stacking on them. And it's very crude at this point. I just got me a computer heat sink that I use now for thawing out pork steak. And it's fun for me. I'm really intrigued by thermal stuff. And I'd like to go back and, I never did learn fluid mechanics and, you know, all the way temperature flows and things. I'm not a mechanical engineer at all, but I'm really, really, really interested in this fluid dynamics business. So anyway, this one heatsink, I have some kind of aluminum. It was 50, 51, something I use on the CNC machine with just scrap, and it's worthless except for thawing out meat. Well, comparing my new heatsink, this new one, which is about the same weight, I would say, same mass, but it gets way colder. Like if you stick both of them, and I'm not exactly sure what that means, but they're about the same surface area as well, different shape, but one the new one is just covered in condensation, and the old one is not. And of course, you could argue that one reason that one of the pieces of aluminum would be cold than the other was because it's not allowing the heat to come in as well. In other words, it's not dissipating cold. Is that the right call? Pause. Edit. I got a kid. What are you going to do? Okay, so yeah, there one possibility is that the heat sink that's covered in condensation is not allowing heat in as quickly. I was going to say dissipating cold, but I don't think it works that way. And but I don't, I mean, they look the same. They're both just flat pieces of aluminum. Pretty much the same. So anyway, I'm intrigued by this. And so I'm pretty sure that one piece of aluminum has wildly different thermal properties than another. And of course, they make 1,000 different kinds of aluminum. That doesn't surprise me, but I didn't really put any thought into that when I just slapped some aluminum on my pork steak. So one benefit of me tearing my stereo apart is now I'm really getting into the thermal properties of aluminum. That's kind of fun. And of course, that old stereo, I told you it was a hefty one. I have no idea the power output on it, but the damn transformer was big. I mean, it weighed, it's bigger than the microwave transformer I also harvested this week, which was also pretty damn cool. But so yeah, I got that. That was cool. Here's a big one. You know, the electronics is, you know, I've been doing that for a while, and I don't know if I'm good at it or anything, but for basic stuff, I can make things that work. I have a working synthesizer. Granted, just a big piece of shit pile of wires on my desk, so it's not a product at all, but it does play, you know, play, I can make music with it, but just very inconveniently. And so, like, the buttons have been a real problem, like, trying to learn how to handle buttons. Like, I have tactile switches. I can push those, but I'm talking about, what do you put on the front to make it a legit product so it won't get beer spilled on it and, you know, all that kind of stuff where it looks like a finished product. Well, by tearing apart this old JVC stereo, I got a real feel for how they did it. And they kind of had this, like, I would call a frame. And inside the frame, they had plastic that was just slightly bendable, sometimes on a hinge, sometimes not. And they would smash that into those tactile switches. And it's the same tactile switches that I use, you know, the standard, like, square with the little circle. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Google tactile switch. You'll see what I'm talking about. Just, it's a standard one that everybody has, like, for Arduino stuff. Arduinos might have one on there. Anyway, and it occurred to me, like, that's all you really got to do. You just have, like, this grid with little plastic pieces on the inside, and those basically smash into your switch. I'm not good at those kinds of things. It's not how my brain works. So that was a really cool insight. Another thing I took apart, I guess a couple months ago, was a hairdryer. Inside the hairdryer, it's pretty straightforward, kind of exactly what I expected. It's more or less a resistor with a fan on it. But what was cool about the hairdryer is it had a circuit breaker on the end, you know, the power wire. And I was like, they had those little test and reset buttons, like you see in all the bathroom stuff. I guess it's like a GFI or GCFI or GFCI, one of those things. Anyhow, it's been incredible for my Christmas light controller because, you know, I'm playing with 110 volts, which is new to me. I haven't done 110 volts in like 10 years. And back then, I knew how to do nothing. Now, I'm pretty comfortable with a lot of this electronic stuff, but I'm not so comfortable with big voltage. Now, I know some of you industrial cats are saying, oh, 110 ain't shit. And really, 110 volts probably doesn't kill too many people. You could probably kill a cat with it, I bet. I don't recommend that. Don't kill animals with electricity. But for me, that extra safety, just having that switch has been great. Because I'm used to that with my power supplies. You know, I got my little Rigel power supply. I have a little on and off button, and I can look and see where it's at and easily turn it off. And it's a nice safety thing. And if I screw something up bad, well, then the breaker immediately flips. So I highly recommend befriending some chicks. And when their hair dryers break, you gotta grab those. Take those apart, especially if you have one of those circuit breakers. You'll need it. And I could probably buy something like this or build it or whatever, but it was just already done. So highly recommended. All right, where are we here? I already talked about synth buttons. Okay, let's talk about the ESP32. Here's what I've entitled my notes. ESP32 and the need to be different. Different. I had this instinct whenever a billion people are doing something, I'll just go do something else. It's just who I am. You could call it the Nickelback complex if you want. If something's too popular, I'm just going to go over here. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't do that with everything. The old friction fun with the old wife, you know, I don't refuse to do that because it's too popular. But other air, I still breathe air, even though it's pretty popular. Either way, so ESP32, it turns out it's been a real joy working with it. And here's the thing. My big goal, and we're going to talk about this here in a minute, is to finish a product. There are many fronts to deal with. We'll talk about that too. Long story short is, as fun as it is to write custom libraries for Arduino or just C in general, I've done both. It's fun. At this point, I want to get to the finish line. So as fun as it is to design a shoe, I would rather just put a shoe on and run. I have a race to win. Well, I guess myself. So, the ESP32 has libraries for basically everything. People have thought of everything. Has everything under the sun. And it's a power hog compared to some little STM32 thing. But it turns out, if you need Wi-Fi or you need some kind of wireless, there's multiple. You don't have to use Wi-Fi. You can use other. It's always 2.4 gigahertz, but it doesn't have to be the Wi-Fi. Was it protocol? I don't know. We're getting out of my wheelhouse here. On it gets into the network business, but. Long story short, ESP32, there's a reason it's so popular. There's a reason that there are so many videos on YouTube. So many people use them for so many things. People use them for things they don't need to. I mean, you could probably get by with an 8-bit microcontroller for a million of these projects you see on YouTube, and people still throw that in there. But it turns out it's been a real pleasure. People have thought of everything, and it's easy to jump in. And the stuff you don't want to have to think about is already been done. Libraries galore. You're kind of getting all that Arduino benefit again, but with, you know, Wi-Fi already built in. And again, I highly recommend it. So I would say don't be different. Just use the ESP32 if it remotely fits whatever you're doing. Okay, so let's talk about product design. Because here's the thing. I don't really... I'm not really into making projects anymore. I mean, I got projects, but everybody does. But my project is a product. And what I mean by that is a project is like a one-off. Like a lot of people like to do DIY soldering irons on YouTube. Not exactly sure why, but then again, that'd be fun to do. But I want to make stuff. My projects are things that I could immediately or almost immediately sell as a kit or a finished product to someone who has no interest in electronics. And I want to be set up for that in case what I do works. Now, it would be, for example, this Christmas light controller, my little prototype on the breadboard. I mean, it worked, you know, first, you know, couple hours, weekend, whatever I did, spent on it. And it worked quickly, and there it is. Cool. I wasn't so bad. Electronics are pretty straightforward once you get the hang of some of the weird stuff with the triax and the phase angle, zero crossing, and, you know, all these little buzzword things. But, actually taking this into a product, making it safe, making it manufacturable, that's a big one. And so, like, a lot of people with ESP32s use a dev board. Well, I don't have a dev, well, I do have dev boards, but for this, we don't. I'm going to have the ESP32 on a PCB with everything else. Why? Because it's much cheaper. You can buy a $10 dev board, or you can buy a $3 chip and have that soldered on, you know, by a factory or whatever. So basically everything needs to be in manufacturable mode from the get-go. And one reason for that is, I'll be honest, the reason is it's fun. I want to design products. That's the big goal. And so I might as well just practice that. But also, building stuff that are one-off, they're usually very inefficient in terms of the way they're time-wise. Like, you build one, and then to build a second one, they're not optimized for manufacturing, I guess, is the short version. But I find I like this, and I want them to be reliable. And if you're using an Arduino with a whole bunch of jumper wires from here to here, those always fall out, like, for me, for no reason. And 6 months later, I'm trying to remember where the orange wire went. It's a disaster. I'd rather have everything soldered, everything like a finished product. And again, that safety part is a big deal. So it takes forever, though, to make a product because there are no small products. You think there are. And so, you know, I started with the synthesizer, which is, we'll say, 80% done, for whatever that number even means. But it turns out I decided I had to get the Christmas light controller going back in June. And here we are. 3 months is what I've been putting into this in my free time. And I don't have a lot of free time. You know, I'm a dad. And I got a full-time job now, so I don't have that near the time I did, when I started this podcast 6 months ago, or whatever it was, 7, 8 months, well, a long time ago. So, going with a small, quote-unquote, small product has been huge. It turns out it's not small at all. It's gigantic. And all I really needed was 8 little switched outlets. And that's really just one switched outlet times 8. I mean, it's just, as far as like a workload, it's easy to copy and paste the other 7. So, it seemed like a really small product, and off we go. And it's unbelievable how much crap to think about. And this is just what products are. It's very, very different. Let me give you an example. So yesterday, okay, so I'm saying, you tell me, Brandon, you need me to a light dimmer, on the breadboard. How long would it take? Yeah, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes now, because I have a schematic. And even if I had to find one online and I had all the parts, 20 minutes. I mean, it's not a big deal to get them to work. They're very simple. Well, I'm shopping for all metal hot ends. Why am I shopping for all metal hot ends? Well, because I'm having trouble with my 3D printer. I switched to a different filament, PETG, because I need my enclosures to survive outside. Now, they got to be UV resistant. Is that it? If you leave a 3D printed part out in the sun in the summer, forget about it. It's going to melt. It'll deform. You'll have a worthless piece of crap. And so PETG doesn't seem to have those UV problems. Now, granted, this is a Christmas light controller, and we hope that it's going to be cold, but we've had days in the 70s in December. And what if somebody in Texas buys this someday? Long story short, I decided to go with PETG just to make sure we were safe up to, I don't know, some number. Let's just say 80 degrees in the sun. And so, because we need PETG filament, and in the long run, if I was to do a million of these, we'd do the injection molded or something. But for now, 3D printing is perfect for me. But my prints weren't coming out good at all. And I've done work with PETG before with a different filament, but I switched brands, and the behavior has been radically different. So I go on this rabbit hole of shopping for all metal hot ends. And then I'm thinking about what it'll take to install it, how much time, and if things go wrong there, then I order new washers, or I need this, or I need a new power supply because I'm running my 3D printer hotter. It never freaking ends. And like other things I've thought about, like, okay, I'm watching YouTube videos on Fusion 360 constraints. I've been brushing up on that again. It's been a while since I've forgotten a lot of the stuff I learned 3 years ago. And spending hours with Alibaba suppliers. You know, I was going to buy 70 strands of Christmas lights, and I thought to myself, maybe I can just get these from China cheaper. And you see them, you'll find them for, like, the good stuff, the really good lights I was looking for, LEDs that you can submerge, like, under, like, 3 meters of water forever, I guess. Yeah, like, $3 a piece. But, of course, the shipping hits you. I end up buying them from America. I end up being cheaper to just for the shipping to be virtually free and the price of the lights to be 3 times as much. So, anyway, there's all these side tangents that you go down when you're doing a product. And this doesn't even count, like, making it look good, you know. And I don't have a clue how to make things look good. I'm no 3D graphics guy. But this is all going to come out to be what looks like a prototype still. But if I get everything right, paying somebody to make it look pretty for me is the least of my worries. So anyway, yeah, products are your hobby, then just be prepared. It's 10, 20, 30 times the work of just making a project where you can throw an Arduino in a box, screw it down, and off you go. So just keep that in mind. What else we got here? Here's some stuff I've learned. China ordering strategies. So I've bought parts off of LCSC. I've done it twice now. I just did my third one. And I ordered 10 of a opto-isolator optimized for Triax. Basically a light dimmer opto-isolator so I can control my Triax with the SP32. And, you know, they're like 10 cents a pop. And of course I ordered a bunch of other stuff on there. And LCSC, it's cheap, cheap, cheap. And similar to the problem with the Christmas lights, though, the parts are cheap. You can get 1,000 resistors for like $2 or something. You know, if you need 1,000 1K resistors, like 0805s. But the shipping, you know, of course, will hammer you pretty good. Now, it's not horrifying because I'm paying like $10 shipping from DigiKey. But, you know, of course, the shipping's a fortune. But so if you were to say, I don't know, order 10 of this Triac opto-isolator, and you actually ended up needing 12, you're going to pay a lot of money to get two more. A whole lot of money. And you got a long shipping time. I didn't realize this, but with LCSC, they take sometimes 3, 4, 5 days to pack everything up. I'm not used to that. Whatever beatings they do here in America on Amazon, they're not beating their Chinese workers at LCSC as hard. I don't understand the difference. God knows, I don't want to understand the difference, but just be ready. It's 4 days for them to pack it, and give or take, and then they ship it, and then it might be 2 or 3 weeks. So you're looking at some substantial time. So when it comes down to, do you want to pay $15 or $20 extra for that to get the much faster shipping, you need to factor in that packaging time. Here's my strategy, because since we know it's going to take a long time, and shipping prices aren't really affected much by how much you buy. You buy one resistor or 10,000, ends up being about the same. So I say if you're actually going to use LCSC, don't buy one. Buy everything you need in case this chip works. And let's say you're trying out a new chip. You don't know how it's going to go. Well, you're thinking you probably need 10. Just buy 50. Just have too many. Just have them in some drawer and never use them rest of your life. That is cheaper and better than buying less than what you need and going, oh, shit, I need two more of these or the product just won't work. Because then you have to go through the whole process again. You're paying $15, $20, $30 on shipping and just to get two 20-cent parts. And sometimes these parts are unique and DigiKey may or may not have them, or DigiKey has something that's similar but may not work with your circuit, and you got to go back and redesign it. And then instead of 1K resistors, you need whatever, 680 ohm resistors, and you don't have those. It never ends. And so just order too much. That's my advice. And of course, you have stuff laying around too much. It usually is valuable, but if it only costs you an extra $2 to get too much, just spend the $2. That's my big advice, because it will take a long time to get them in. But I will say the parts have all been good. I've had no dead parts. People talk about the gray market. You can't trust that shit. There's probably some truth to that sometimes, but I don't think LCSC is gray market. I don't know what they are, and I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why the prices are so different, but I'm not going to complain. All right, so that's it. If you liked the Electron Injection podcast and wanted to hear a guy rant incoherently and horribly about electronics, let me know. If people actually like this stupid thing, then I will I'll keep doing them. I'll make a stronger effort because I like doing them. I'm just busy. And the time I take away from this is time I wasn't, you know, cussing Fusion 360 or cussing KiCad or etc. All right, guys, over and out. Oh, yeah, remember, Electron Injection. If you want to contact me, just go to electroninjection.com. I'm sure it's a disaster and not built, not finished. But what else is new? I'm a disaster. I'm a mess. Out.